The following episode may contain inappropriate material. Listener discretion is advised.
You're listening to the PVD Cast with John Orlando.
Welcome, ladies and gentlemen, to another installment of the PVD Cast. I am your humble host and your podcast purveyor, John Orlando, and welcome to episode number 539. Hope all is going well for you, and thank you very much for checking out this edition of the PVD Cast. Now, my guest is a gentleman by the name of Chris Mancini, and he is behind White Cat Entertainment, a multifaceted entertainment company in Los Angeles. They do comics, podcasts, prose books, short films. And so we're going to talk about everything under the umbrella of White Cat Entertainment. Specifically, though, we're going to focus on Alpha Cat. And Alpha Cat is a comic book that Chris has created. One of the things that we're going to talk about with Alpha Cat is the current Kickstarter that's just about ready to end or has already ended, depending on when you listen to this episode. But don't worry, Chris will tell you how you can get your hands on a copy of Alpha Cat number 2, which is what the Kickstarter's for. So don't feel shut out. Don't feel let down that you didn't get a chance to get your hands on Alpha Cat 2. And of course, ultimately, we'll also tell you where you can get a hold of issue 1 of Alpha Cat as well. So we got a lot to talk about, so I'm not going to waste any more time. I'm going to, first of all, thank a few sponsors, and then I'll throw it to our conversation. Obviously, we have a couple of sponsors that I need to thank. Let's talk about some deals. I know many of you are out there probably beginning your back-to-school shopping, and you just love to get a good deal. And you could do that through the newest sponsor of the PVD Cast, Courtney 614 Deals. Courtney has deals with all types of items such as health and beauty, clothing, home decor, and much, much more. Courtney can be found on all of those reselling sites like eBay, Whatnot, Poshmark, and others. Simply just look for Courtney 614 Deals. That's Courtney 614 Deals. And if you purchase anything from Courtney, please let her know that you heard about her endeavors right here on the PVD Cast. Now, I need to thank, of course, the old school sponsor. Of course, I'm talking about World's Greatest Comics. They're located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. And they have tons of comics from every era. The golden, the silver, the bronze, and the modern era. But they also have graphic novels, toys, back issues, comic book supplies, everything you need for your fandom. So stop by the store and say hi to the fine folks of World's Greatest. Or you could check them out online. WGComics.com is the web address. And they're pretty active on the Facebook page. Just search for at WG Comics. And once again, I want to thank my great sponsors for supporting the PVD Cast over the last couple of years. I truly do appreciate it. And with that, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, you're going to hear my conversation talking with Chris Mancini from White Cat Entertainment. Ladies and gentlemen, joining me this afternoon, all the way from the West Coast, California, if I remember correctly, Mr. Chris Mancini. You're the individual behind White Cat Entertainment. Chris, how you doing?
Doing great. Thanks for having me on.
You're quite welcome. How's things out there on the West Coast?
Warm, but it's to be expected this time of year.
Yes, that's true. But that's true. So you are part of what I'll call a multifaceted entertainment company. You produce comics, podcasts, short films, et cetera, et cetera. How did you get started with all these creative endeavors? In other words, were you always a creative person?
I was. I've been writing since I was about 16, and I went to film school, actually on the East Coast. I went to a Temple University, and I started as a stand-up comic. I was performing around the Philly, New Jersey area at the time. I was going to college, made some great friends. And then when I came out to LA, you know, I came out with $200 in my pocket and I was so broke that I actually stopped at Catch a Rising Star in St. Louis on the way out just to make some money so I could get all the way to LA. So I got to LA and I started like getting into independent film, doing stand up a little bit more, and slowly kind of grew my kind of like, you know, I hate to say brand, but that's kind of what it is now. Everything's a brand. And I started a company with a friend of mine, Graham Elwood, and we did Comedy Film Nerds for many years, which was a podcast and a production company. And we ended that at about 2019, right before the pandemic hit and all the movie theaters closed. So we looked like geniuses. So I'm like, hey, we saw it coming. No, we didn't. It was timing. But and then after that, I put kind of everything I wanted to do into this new company, White Cat Entertainment. We started about 2020, and everything I learned from like writing, from comedy to stand up, to all the relationships I had built in entertainment and a love of comics, and put them all together and podcasts and everything I wanted to do. But the overall core was to tell stories. Like, you know, I've been doing stand up for a long time and interviewing comedians. We have 600 episodes of the Comedy Film Nerds podcast. I wanted to do something different. So I wanted to just focus on what I love the most, which is telling stories. And it's been going well and the company's been expanding. But, you know, it's independent, you know, production. So everything is always on a shoestring, but the shoestring's gotten thicker, which is a good thing. So
I have to ask real quickly, because I think that a lot of people think it's really easy to be a stand-up comic. All you got to do is tell jokes. In your professional opinion, is that true or is that false?
Well, it is true that all you have to do is tell jokes. That that part is true. But at the same time, yeah, it's very, very difficult. You really have to love it. You have to love connecting with an audience. You have to love live performing. And there's certain aspects of it that I never loved, and dealing with promoters and not getting paid and, you know, trying to fill out your schedule and booking and all of these things. But the people I met, the other comedians, and, you know, I ended up hooking up after I got to LA with the Improv and Bud Friedman. So I would be working a lot of the higher end clubs in Vegas and Tahoe. So that's a lot easier. Once you kind of get to that level, like when you're working in the higher, you know, you're going to get paid and you know, you're going to have a good experience and the crowds are going to be good. But, you know, there's, you know, tons of one-nighters in bars where, you know, you're afraid when you get there, there's going to be chicken wire and then, you know, bottles of beer are going to be thrown at you. So, you know, there's definitely a high and low to the life of a stand-up comic, just like bands. You know, it's the same thing for sure. But yeah, it's a very difficult thing. But at the same time, it's a really, really free way to express yourself. And, you know, no one's giving you notes when you're on stage, except the audience, of course. They'll let you know if they like you or not. But you can do whatever you want. You could say whatever you want. And it's a very freeing art form. And I know a lot of comedians like myself who moved into like maybe movies and TV or other platforms. And I know a lot of comedians who were like, nope, this is it. I'm going to do these other things, but I'm never going to give up stand up. That's always going to be kind of my, you know, my main thing. And those are the ones who truly, truly love it and the expression and the art form. So hats off to them. I didn't want to be on the road anymore. You know, I transitioned to other things. Although I just did one show in San Diego for with Doug Benson. I did Doug Loves Movies. I hadn't been on that show in a while, and it was fun to be kind of back in a comedy club again. So, but yeah, it's if anybody is interested in being a stand-up comic, start with, you know, open mics and getting a presence on YouTube. Now, that's the new thing now, too. You have to have a big presence on YouTube or Instagram to get booked in clubs. But work on your craft and express yourself. It's but make sure you love it. Stand-up is not something you do if you don't love it.
Well, let's talk about your current project, Alpha Cat. The second installment is coming very soon. Yes. Could you give the listeners a summary of Alpha Cat?
Absolutely. Alpha Cat was an interesting, had an interesting origin. Like when we would start doing cons and people would come up to us and look at the logo. The logo for White Cat Entertainment is a cat with a jetpack, if you probably saw on the website. And people would come up and see the books we had, Long Ago and Far Away and Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. And they go, well, where's his book? I said, well, what are you talking about? Well, it's a cat with a jetpack. I would read that. Where is his book? And it was kids and adults would come up. And I was like, we don't have that yet. So I talked to my artist, Fernando Pinto, and he was like, I said, do you want to make this book? He's like, yeah, I'm down. I'm like, okay, great. So we decided what it would be. And we went through all the things we loved as children, basically, and all the things we loved as adults. So it was a mixture of Pixar movies, Ratchet and Clank, video games, Looney Tunes cartoons, the Heart of the Iron Giant, like things like that. And we all kind of rolled them together and made basically a Star Trek in space with animals. So we kind of pitch it as like Star Trek meets Ratchet and Clank, although somebody described it as Starship Troopers with cats, and I can't unthink that. So now I'm like, okay, I think it's that too. So a lot of people ask, well, is it a kid's book? Is it an adult book? And the answer is kind of yes, because we wanted to create that PG-13 kind of sweet spot where adults could enjoy it. There's stuff about war and intolerance, but it's also funny, and there's nothing that will be like, you know, give kids nightmares or anything like that. It kind of hit that, you know, like that inside out kind of sweet spot for sure. So that's what the book basically is. Soldiering, exploring, robots, insects, giant spiders. There's all sorts of things in it, but it's an adventure story in space.
Well, every good adventurer needs a great crew. So can you tell us a little bit about what each of the characters, what do they bring to the table? Why did you decide to create this cavalcade of fellows adventurers?
Well, I always loved Star Trek and how like you had this massive crew on this ship and everybody had their own story and everybody kind of worked together, and sometimes they did not get along, and sometimes, you know, there was external threats, sometimes things were happening internally. So I wanted to give us a really large sandbox to play in. So that's why I created a fair amount of supporting characters. You have your first officer, Diana, who's also a cat. And then you have Caitlin, who is the communications officer. But there's a love triangle there that Alpha is not quite aware of yet. And you have Manny, who's a lion, who's the security officer. And you have, of course, Jonathan Eagle, who's head of the Raptors. That's the fighter pilots. And the only note I gave to the artist, I'm like, could you make him a bald eagle instead of a regular eagle to make him a little more American Flyboy Top Gunning? And he was like, absolutely. So, but there are some mysterious characters. We're not really sure what's going on there. Like after the wars with the insects, the robots all went back to their home planet, Robot Moon, except for a few. Like, and one of them is the chef, the cook on Alpha's crew. And we're not really sure why he stayed. And there's some scoundrels like Cutter Fox, who he finds like basically raiding a robot temple to find this ancient relic. He has a robot with him too, but he doesn't speak. He only speaks in beeps and boops. Like, why is he still there? So what I wanted to do with the book is to have the first couple issues establish the world and have this mystery unfold. Like, is war coming back into this universe? Are we exploring what's with the robot temples? Why are things starting to get unrest? Why are there all these pirates running around attacking people? And everything will be related and everything will kind of get put together, because I always loved the idea of like an epic story on an epic scale. Like, I didn't want to just do like a one-off of one or two issues. I wanted to really give this world the chance to breathe, and the artist was down with it. So this first series is probably going to be about 6 to 8 issues to kind of get the first storyline in.
Well, let's talk a little bit about your relationship with your artist, Fernando Pinto. Where did you first meet Fernando, and what made him the one that you had to have for this project?
You know, we have a shorthand now. Like, we met probably about a decade ago. We've been working together for so long now, and it was actually a referral from another podcaster who was working with him on another project, and he's actually Chilean. So he lives in Chile. And I only see him once a year at San Diego Comic-Con in person. And that's it. The rest of the time, it's Zoom calls, emails, and all of those things. But the thing about Fernando and I now is when we first started working together, there were a lot more notes going back and forth. But when a writer and artist for comics start working together for a long time, they develop a shorthand. So now when I send him a script or I send him, like, this is what I'm kind of thinking of, he'll draw almost exactly what's in my head, which is really weird in a good way. But it's so we kind of like have that little psychic connection on what we're kind of thinking when it goes back and forth. And I knew he would be perfect because it's actually very, very difficult to find a comic book artist who doesn't draw in a super realistic style, because everything's superhero based. You know, you have everything looks like Superman or Spider-Man or the Hulk, and it's all about muscle tone and definition. And my stuff has a sense of humor to it. So I needed a illustrator that could bring that forth in the illustrations with a little bit more of a cartoony design, but not like a Sunday Funnies kind of design, like the kind of like a an animation type style. And that's what we were looking at as far as like, you know, well, okay, well, like, again, Ratchet and Clank or Pixar or one of these great animated movies, like what would it actually look like? So so I knew he was the right person for the job just from the, you know, 8 to 9 years prior work with him.
All right, well, let's talk about the Kickstarter that's been happening. As a matter of fact, as many of you are listening to this episode, the campaign has ended, and we're happy to say, or at least I'm happy to say, that it is fully funded, even at the recording, even as we record this. So that's got to be a huge moment of pride for you, Chris, is that you got everything squared away and you got you reached your goal.
Absolutely. And every Kickstarter we do is a nail biter, because you never know people are going to show up for it, especially with a new title. Even though this is our second issue, you don't always know how the first one was received. Thankfully, it was received very well. People were excited about it. It got good reviews, and a lot of the feedback was really great. And a lot of it started with two. Was I knew from the first page this wasn't a kid's title, and I said that exactly. It was. It's, you know, it's kind of like for everyone. But we had a couple of days, you know, with the campaign where it was already funded, to kind of like overfund, which is great, because those of you that don't know what crowdfunding is, there's always canceled pledges, taxes, credit card fees, and, you know, platform fees. So it's never the number you see is the number that the creator gets. It's always less. And so any extra funding we get is always great. So it's enough to make the book, and it's enough to move forward with the next issue and the next campaign. The other thing that I do like about Kickstarter now, like, even if you're listening to this after the campaign ended, we have enabled late pledges, so you could still get in on the campaign and get catch-up tiers. Like, if you missed issue one, you could get those. The only thing you can't get is the custom artwork, because that has to be kind of blended in with the campaign and with the book. So, but all the other rewards, if you just want books or alternate covers, those are still available.
Yeah, there you go, folks. You have no excuse, for lack of a better term, for not plunking down some cash and helping Chris out. And
John, I like the way you put that. You have no excuse. Yeah.
None. You have none. I mean, you might think, well, it's over, it's fully funded. No. You could still help Chris out, man. Don't be that guy. You know, don't be that mindset. You can help him out. But in all seriousness, yeah, definitely help if you can. And real quickly, before we move on to another topic, where can folks find out about the Kickstarter?
The easiest place to get to it is just go to whitecatentertainment.com. And then there's a link right on the homepage that'll take you right to the campaign.
I'm going to interrupt my conversation with Chris for just one moment to talk to you about World's Greatest Comics. They are your one-stop shop for all your comic book-related needs. They've got single issues, graphic novels, toys, back issues galore, comic book supplies, you name it, they got you covered. So you need to stop by the store, which is located at 5974 Westerville Road in Westerville, Ohio. Or you can check them out via their website, wgcomics.com, or check out their Facebook page, which is at WGComics. Well, I mentioned that you have kind of a multifaceted company in White Cat Entertainment. So let's talk about some of your other projects. And one that I really liked, you had a snippet of it up, I believe, on your website. It's called Earbuds, a podcast documentary.
Yes.
Can
Can you fill us in a little bit on that project?
Absolutely. When we were doing a Comedy Film Nerds, it was kind of like the height of independent podcasting right before kind of all the corporations took over and dominated everything. But what it was is we were really fascinated as podcasters and the way all of our friends were, that there is such an emotional connection between podcaster and fan that doesn't exist in any other medium. We were absolutely fascinated by it. So we wanted to explore it more in a documentary. So what we did is we interviewed podcasters and fans, and we literally went all over the world. We started in this country, but then we also went to Australia, and we wanted to meet like the furthest Comedy Film Nerds fan we could find. And this guy lived and worked in a mine in Western Australia. So we actually flew to him for the documentary and interviewed him there. And we make the joke in the documentary, we'll go to the ends of the earth to meet the podcast fans. And we literally went to the end of the earth. There was nothing there except a mine and I think the outback. And then I think there was one subway. but that's kind of like what we wanted to do with that documentary, is explore that connection, because podcasting and podcasters and podcast fans are all something really, really special, and that connection is special, and we wanted to not only explore it but also celebrate it, and show other people that didn't know what podcasting was or what it was about, that, you know, what you could jump into. And there's a podcast for everyone, there's a podcast for every single interest. There's, anything you can imagine, there's already a podcast for it. Now, the movie did get distribution, so you can find it on Amazon Prime and all these other places. So it's easy to find.
With many of your projects, that you've been worked on in the past, I like what you did with Myopic Visions. I've never seen that before, but Chris, I just wanted to compliment you. Like, that's a brilliant idea to give those, I don't know, 15-second clips. I don't know the exact time, but to piece those all together to give you a taste of what those films are about. What was your decision-making process to do that?
Well, it was another time, John. And what we would do is back in, when independent film was really hitting big in the 90s and, even the late 80s, we would make a lot of short films. Like, I would come to LA, I was probably about mid 90s, and we would all have these like little independent film groups, and we would help each other out, like on the weekends. Like, all right, one day we would be the director, it would be our film. But then the next week we would be, lighting or grip or whatever. The whole point was just to get the films made and to help each other out. And these films would play festivals, and they would go places, and they would actually sometimes even get distribution. And it was kind of before all of the, the verticals and all of these other things that are short form content. They were actually, short films, and they would play festivals. Sometimes they would have their own blocks. Sometimes they would be in front of features, but it was one of the ways like filmmakers could get their work out there, before, everything exploded on YouTube. And I mean, I'm going back a little bit, but that's kind of the, impetus of it. And one of the things I wanted to do, I had made so many of them, and including one on 35mm film called Hit Clown, which is about a hitman and a clown who accidentally switch bags and find they like the other's job better. I wanted to compile them into one DVD. And again, now I'm going back. I said the word DVD, but barely anybody has players anymore. And then that got distributed, and that, went on Netflix and all of these different places. And then as things progressed, you're like, all right, well, no one's going to rent DVDs anymore. So I ended up putting all of the short films up on YouTube. So they all are there now. But the DVD was one of those great compilations where I got to kind of put everything together in one place. All the short films, the interviews I did with the Sci-Fi Channel, all of these kind of cool things in a package, like some commentary. But because that's kind of like a lost thing anymore. Like, you can't buy a DVD and get all of the commentary and all of those extra features anymore. It's getting rarer and rarer, which is a shame, because I feel like it's a lost art. Like, sometimes as filmmakers that want to learn about the craft, they could actually get like a Terry Gilliam film or something like that on DVD and watch the directors and listen to the director's commentary. It was like going to film school on a DVD. I mean, to hear how these, great, huge directors decided on every shot and every scene and what each thing meant. And, so It's I'm a little melancholy that we're losing that a bit with physical media. But yeah, that was kind of the impetus of making short content.
I am a huge fan of physical media. As a matter of fact, truth be told, I jokingly said off air that I was putting in my Amazon order, my Amazon Prime order, and I added to it on Blu-ray Jojo Rabbit, the Scarlett Johansson.
Nice.
Because I really, really like it. And I realized I don't have it in my collection either on DVD or Blu-ray. And I was like, $12, sure, I'll get it because that's me. Things that I really, really like, I will get the physical media version of it because, you know.
And that's one that could be pulled. You know,
yes. Yes. Sad to say that, but that's accurate, Chris. It could be one that does not see the light of day for a while. Mm-hmm. But I do that, you know, no matter what it is. If I like something, like I'll tell you another one that the new Masters of the Universe, when that hits Blu-ray, I'm buying it because I loved it. It was so much fun. And it was, you know, I'm a kid of the 70s. So He-Man was right in my wheelhouse. I think that I agree with you on so many of your points there that, you know, this physical media is important. It is something that should be you know, heralded and still have a spot in entertainment.
For sure.
Well, let's talk a little bit about podcasts here. You have one that is called What Are You Watching with Chris Mancini? And I assume that is kind of a little bit of a where you have some guests come on and you talk about shows or movies that you're watching. Am I correct on that analysis?
Yes. And it's the one thing that goes against the company mandate where I said only storytelling. I wasn't going to interview people anymore. And yet here I am. So what I wanted to do is kind of like do a spiritual successor of Comedy Film Nerds, although it's not every week. It's not it's as we release. So I wanted to get the perspective of people that create movies and TV and comics, kind of get a little bit of insight into their process and why they create. But then I wanted to get like their perspective on what they're watching and why, because they always have a different kind of perspective. Like if you make media, you know, what you're watching might be a little different. I mean, I've had guests come on and talk about they're watching like obscure Australian crime dramas that I've never heard of. So it's always an interesting discussion because it can lead to a deep dive into stuff that I'm not aware of.
Then you have another podcast called The Quiet Journeys of Professor Atwood. Is that a kind of radio drama? Would that be a fair way to describe it?
Sort of. That's kind of a hybrid one that I wanted to create something and take everything that I learned from comedy, storytelling, to anxiety, to insomnia, all of the things that you know, because I suffer from anxiety. And I wanted to give people a tool to help them with it. So, but what I wanted to do is not something that tells you how to breathe and all of this nonsense. I wanted it to be something that was fun. You could turn on in the background and just have it do all the work for you. So it's a never-ending audiobook about a professor who goes on all these journeys throughout the world and beyond. And it's quiet. It's, you know, there is some excitement to the journeys, but mostly not. But they're always interesting. And I partnered with my buddy, Ron Tansky, who is a composer, and he creates a new soundtrack and soundscape with sound effects and original music for every single episode. So, and all of the tones in the music are set to also kind of lower, you know, your temperature and anxiety and help you kind of sleep. So it's a mixture of, you know, something that's a storytelling, fun podcast, but also a tool that can kind of help you. So, but we're on a bit of a hiatus right now because we got burned down on it a lot because there were over 100 episodes. It was a lot, but it is coming back.
The final podcast that I read about was Conversations from the Abyss. And what's that show all about?
This is one of the ones that I wanted to put all of my weird and creepy and angry thoughts into one other podcast. Like, basically, I have the two podcasts are Stories to Help You Sleep and Stories to Keep You Awake. And this is the one to kind of keep you awake. It's a Twilight Zone style podcast where it's anthology, where each episode is a separate story, but it's world building and it has all these weird conversations that you weren't supposed to hear. Like, so you're kind of listening, you're kind of eavesdropping on something you shouldn't hear, like an angel and a demon having a conversation about life and death in a restaurant, or you know, a woman who can't make a decision is arguing with her necklace that is controlling her life, and all of these weird kind of situations that I kind of threw into this mix in each episode can kind of like shed some light on something that, you know, we might be feeling at one time in our lives. And there's one guy that gets stuck in a waiting room and he doesn't remember where he got there, how he got there, or how he can get out. But I also kind of went through my Rolodex and made sure, I was like, well, if I'm going to do a voiceover scripted podcast, I got to get good voices. So it's, you're going to recognize a lot of names from like Legend of Korra, Welcome to Night Vale, Drunk History, and Archer. So there's a lot of like really good voiceover talent in this one. And because it wouldn't work, like I tried to do it, I was like, well, is this going to, the voices are really going to be key, because if you use kind of like amateur voices, but you have like really dramatic things happening, it falls flat and it takes people out of it. So I had to make sure, like sometimes I had to wait until people's schedules were available, which is fine. I do a season every couple of years. So, and we're working on the fourth season right now. We're hoping that'll drop in the fall.
Okay, cool. So a couple of comics to talk about here. You have Long Ago and Far Away, which I love the description on the website. Polite Black Knights, Sexy Witches. That was hilarious. That made me laugh. And of course, you also have The Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. So can we talk about these two comics?
Yes, absolutely. Well, first of all, John, I'm stuck in the 80s. So everything has a a really fun 80s, you know, buddy comedy kind of vibe to it, especially like Rise of the Kung Fu Dragon Master. It feels like Big Trouble in Little China, which is a movie that I grew up on. And it's also a movie that reminded me so much of all of the other shows that I grew up on, like Black Belt Theater and all of the Kung Fu Hustle and all of the shows I enjoyed and movies I enjoyed as an adult, too. And Jackie Chan movies, and how you could mix like adventure and monsters and martial arts and humor all together in like a really fun, compelling story. So that's kind of like my, you know, homage to all of those things I grew up with. And for Long Ago and Far Away, we've been really having a lot of fun with this title. And it all kind of like stemmed from the idea that you have the Narnia stories where the kids go through the wardrobe and then they come back. And I always thought, well, what would happen to those kids if they grew up, got shitty jobs, and they were assholes? Then they had to go back into that world again as adults. But since they're jerks, they just make things worse. So that's kind of the premise for Long Ago and Far Away. Heroes when they were younger, now they're older. They go back and like things are not the way they seem to remember. And so it's also a story of like, can you get that child sense of childhood wonder back when you've been kind of lost for many years? And so there's a bit of a redemptive arc in it too, but it's also a classic portal fantasy, that which is everything I grew up on. I mean, how many of us didn't want to like, oh, just go into the library and go in to find like that secret door that you could go and just leave into another world?
So I'm going to ask, with Kung Fu Dragon Master, what's your favorite Kung Fu movie?
You know, it's probably going to be like Kung Fu Hustle. I mean, if you go back to like a classic one, 36 Chamber of Shaolin, but like the as far as the modern ones, I loved everything about Kung Fu Hustle, and I loved Rumble in the Bronx was probably one of my favorite Jackie Chan's. But there was a real obscure one. I think they even changed the title, The Big Brawl, if you remember that one with Jackie Chan, where he's like, it's like some kind of fight club, and but it's hard to find, and I think they even changed the title. But that's another really good one if you want to send your listeners on a deep dive into Jackie Chan movies.
All right. Well, I've got a few more questions to ask you, Chris, here, and we'll start wrapping things up. But I'd like to talk a little bit about the books that you also have published, such as Pacify Me, which is kind of your experience of dealing as being a new father, correct?
Yes, that was the book. Like when I was about to become a new father, I was terrified about it. Like, you know, I was thinking, oh, my life is over, and all of these things that, you know, a lot of new fathers go through. And I was looking around at the bookshelves and like, there is nothing for a guy here that like is describing kind of like what I'm kind of going through. And it was all books for women. I was 99% books for women. And the only parts for the dad were like in the woman's books. And it was like, this part's for the dad. And it always is support the woman. That's literally all it would ever say. And so I decided to write a book about, you know, my experience about being a dad, being terrified at first and then ultimately growing to love it. And but that transition, you know, took some time and some getting used to. And it was one of those things that I wanted to kind of share with all the other new dads. And I'll tell you, I've been in entertainment for a long time and nothing is ever easy. This is the one time that things worked really well. Like I wrote the proposal, I sent it to an agent, the agent had a referral and sent it to Simon & Schuster and they bought it. And I was like, oh, why can't it always work this way? So it got published a couple of years ago and now we're looking to see if we can expand it a little bit into like a TV or a movie property. But yeah, it was really fun. And the most satisfying thing about that is like, as artists, we know, like, you know, we want to entertain people, but if we can help them too, that'd be great. Like some people have emailed and said, hey, you know, I was going through this and I couldn't really talk to anybody about it. Thank you so much. You made me feel like this was normal. And now I love being a dad. So like the feedback like that is really, you know, why we do what we do.
You've mentioned the Comedy Film Nerds several times, and they also have a book. What's the most controversial take in this book? Because, I mean, when you talk about movies and people want to talk about their favorites, sometimes it gets a little heated, if you will.
What isn't controversial when you talk about movies now? And
touche, touche. Yeah.
everything now is an agenda or whatever, like clickbait. Believe me, I've had these many discussions how most reviews are worthless. Anyway, that we'll go down a rabbit hole on that when movie reviews. But what we wanted to do with the book is that we wanted to give each comedian a chapter and talk about kind of like what was their top 10, their bottom 10, and what the genres were like. Everything from romantic comedies to film school classics to family movies to action to horror. And as we kind of went through them, there was always controversies and like, what do you mean you didn't like that movie? Or how could you say that movie was great? Or like, but they were fun. They were fun discussions. And, you know, the fans would get in on it. Like once the book actually went out, there was all sorts of feedback. You were dead on this. And then you were like, there's no way this was should be in the bottom 10. So it's always a fun time when you do movie reviews.
I also wanted to mention real quick that I saw on the website that White Cat Entertainment offer services for creatives. And I don't know if I've seen that in the many, many people that I've had conversations with, but I again, will give you a tip of the hat. I think that that's great that you're willing to help out folks when they're maybe stuck or jammed up or have questions or whatnot. So why'd you decide to do that? Was it because no one else is doing it? That's why you felt the need?
No, there's way too many people doing it is actually... one of the problems is that because one of the things I always wanted to do, I've always had people help me out. I've always, you know, gone through the indie path and learned by doing. And there are certain things that I can definitely impart onto other people. And if somebody has like a specific need of like doing a Kickstarter or needs a script written or something like that, like there's many different things that, you know, we White Cat Entertainment can kind of help with. Because one of the things we do is we do contract work, like for, you know, for writing for other companies. And what that'll do is that also helps kind of fund the company. So it's a benefit to both things. Like it's a way that we could also kind of get our knowledge out into the world and we can help people. But it's also ways to kind of fuel everything that the company is doing. But at the same time, if you have just like a question and something and you just want an answer to, just email me through the website. I'm happy to just answer something if you just have a question on something. No charge. So,
all right. Before we get ready for our last question here, Chris, let's talk about it one more time. Where can folks find information about Alpha Cat number 2, the Kickstarter? Where can they get the information for that again?
Go to whitecatentertainment.com and then it's right on the homepage. There'll be a link to Alpha Cat. And then also we do have a store on the website if you want to grab any of the books that have been previously put out, and we will ship them out and I will sign them for you as well.
Social media, where can folks keep tabs on White Cat Entertainment?
You can also go to the website, just click on the links. You know, we do a little bit of Instagram and Facebook. You know, I had Twitter or X now. We're not as active on there anymore because of all the throttling, but we're definitely on Instagram and Facebook, and we've just started playing around with Blue Sky. But you know, as soon as you kind of get used to one, it either changes or it gets destroyed or disappears or so. Did I mention, John, I don't like social media? Did I? But I know it's a necessary thing, so we are on it.
All right. So last question, for those folks that were maybe as curious as I was, where did you come up with the name White Cat Entertainment?
That is actually another interesting story. I was trying to think of like a new name for the company. And I was talking to some marketing people and I came up with a couple of different names and I couldn't get domains or whatever. And then I was like, this is really what I want. And then I mentioned White Cat Entertainment and a marketing person told me, he said, that's kind of like what's called an empty vessel, which means White Cat Entertainment on its own doesn't really mean anything. So you fill it with meaning. So, you know, you kind of have like once people get to know your work and your book, then they associate it with White Cat Entertainment. But the original came from I had a white cat for many years, almost lived to 21 years, which is a very long time for a cat. Crazy, right? Yeah. And her name was Avatar way before the movies. Actually, people didn't know what that word meant. I'm like, oh, and then when the movie came out, they were like, oh, now I know what it is. So she would kind of be like my writing partner. She would come into, you know, my office and sit on her little cat house and basically sit there while I would write all day long and be there. So I wanted to kind of honor her a little bit with the company. And I thought like it was kind of like a real personal thing for me. And also then the empty vessel. And then it turned out that, you know, it was the inspiration for Alpha. So I knew it was the right decision because then it inspired Alpha Cat. But that's the, you know, White Cat Entertainment was based on an actual cat.
All right. Chris, thanks again, man, so much for taking some time out of your busy schedule to sit down and chat with me this afternoon. I really appreciate it.
Oh, absolutely. This was great. Thank you.
You're quite welcome. And with that, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to throw it to a quick break. And on the other side of the break, I'll be back to wrap up the episode.
Well, there you have it, ladies and gentlemen. My conversation with Chris Mancini from White Cat Entertainment. And I want to thank Chris for taking some time out of his busy schedule to sit down and chat with me and talk about all the cool things White Cat Entertainment has going on for themselves. And maybe you really like this episode and maybe you have some questions about Chris or White Cat Entertainment or this episode of the PVD cast. Well, let me tell you how you can get in touch with me. First of all, you can shoot me an email if you like, johnorlando@pvdcast.com. You can also drop me a line over at Threads, Instagram, or Facebook. Just look for @pvdcast. And, you know, I'm still on Twitter. I know, I should stop using that cesspool. But anyways, if you want to drop me a line over there on Twitter, just look for my personal handle of @pvdmvp. Now, maybe you want to let some folks know about the show and where they can hear it. Well, there's a couple different avenues for that. First of all, pvdcast.com is the online home of yours truly and probably the best place to get every single new episode of the show. And of course, the PVDcast is available through all of those major podcasting outlets and apps. All you have to do is go to your favorite outlet or app, go to the search bar, put in PVDcast. Sometimes you have to put my name after it. And you should find it. And let's say that you do use your favorite podcasting outlet or app to listen to the show. I'm going to ask you to go ahead and rate and review, please. Rating and reviewing helps me out in the algorithm, and it's super important for all podcasters, especially those independent podcasters that you know, need those hosting companies to know that people are listening. So again, can you rate? Can you review? Can you also subscribe so that you never miss an episode of the PVD cast? And there's a third and final way that you can hear each episode of the show, and that is on Wednesday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time through the Facebook page. Once again, that handle is @PVDcast. So all you gotta do is go over to @PVDcast on Facebook on a Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, and you can check out the show there. So there's, once again, three easy ways to hear the show: pvdcast.com, through your favorite podcasting outlet or app, and of course, through the Facebook page on Wednesday nights, 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, for the live broadcast. All right, that being said, ladies and gentlemen, I'm going to get on out of here. I want to thank you very much for checking out the episode, and I will chat at each and every one of you later. Stay righteous, stay independent, and stay safe and healthy. Presentation of John Orlando Enterprises, LLC, copyright 2026.